Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody.
Sometimes the feeling is right. You fall in love for the first time. Heartbeat and kisses so sweet. Summertime love in the moonlight.
Joining us on this very special Monday, the 13th of June already. The Price is Right. A special thank you to C. Robert Jones for allowing me to steal his airtime today and for his show. We're about to bring on some people. Michael Price should be joining us about quarter after the hour. Mike Price for U.S. Senate in Ohio. This very active Republican wants to go back to grassroots GOP policy and strong leadership. He said, quote, "The common denominator in our country's demise is the wild, uncontrolled spending by both parties." Amen to that. We need to sever the cord between CEOs and politicians. We cannot continue to leave the working man out into the cold while CEOs run away with millions of taxpayer dollars. If you check the description box, I do have a link to Mike Price's website. He is a very serious and very viable candidate as in the Republican Party. He is an author as well as a physician. Tonight on a C. Robert Jones Report, Mike Price joins us in a cast of characters in a roundtable. Craig Shaw will be joining us from Toledo. Hopefully Doc Weiss out of the Cleveland area. Tesler stepping in for GGT. He has a family emergency, and please keep him and his family in your prayers. What exactly is going on, I'll leave that for him, but you know, whether we agree or disagree, everybody needs our prayers. And today we take your questions. We will take some calls possibly too. And tonight, the price is right. Anyway, with that being said and done, let's see. Area code 202. Who do I have here? Area code 202. Oh, I got to go back on hold. Skype caller 200.
That might be me. This is Craig.
Hey, Craig. Well, welcome aboard, Craig. Craig,
good to be here.
Correct. You are from the Toledo area, correct?
Yeah, I'm about 40 miles south. It's Tiffin, Ohio.
Okay.
So near Finley.
Okay.
Big city.
Okay, Doc Jones, we'll get you next. Craig, why don't you introduce yourself to Jock Jones's crowd, as we obviously have a packed house already in the chat room. Introduce yourself, tell people a little bit about your show and, you know, your nature of business.
Yeah, I do a show called We Are America. We have got a few shows compiled under the We Are America United, Wahoo Network. It includes Insane Government, Conservative Prime Time, which is Mike and Jermaine's show, Blues Prime Time Music Show on Saturdays, my show, We Are America, which just came back on Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, and Victor Mikulovsky does a show called Insane Government. I co-host that with him every now and then. We actually just got done interviewing Reza Khali, who was a former Iranian Revolutionary Guard, CIA operative, and very interesting insight. We just got done interviewing him for the second time, actually. It's just a good show, and we just want to promote conservative political points of view and just to get everybody talking about it and hopefully put some pressure on our elected individuals, such as Mike Price, giving us the ability to question him. So.
Oh, great. Dr. Jones, your mic is open. And,
all right.
thank you, Dr. Jones. I appreciate you letting me use your show again. I know a couple of weeks ago you let us use it for the First Amendment topic, yeah. But I really appreciate it. When I was arranging this with George, Mr. Price's kind of left-hand man.
Left-hand man.
I suggested they come on at 11:30, and he was like, what? He goes, The two of us are looking to be up after dinner. So,
yeah, me too.
What? Oh, Doc, please. You better get a lot of coffee in you today, but we're expecting hopefully Doc White will be here. I hadn't had a chance to catch up with anyone, but hopefully they will be, and hopefully Mr. Price will join us about quarter after the hour or shortly around that. What we're going to do is Tesla is also going to join us in place of GDT. Mm-hmm. What we're going to do is once Mr. Price gets on, we're going to do a little introduction. Then we're going to give him, a minute or two to give an opening statement. With that said, it's tradition for me when I do something along these lines to give Tesla the first question. Then we'll just go around and ask these questions concerning us. Post the questions in the chat room if we can get to it. And I have I submitted my questions to him in advance. The reason I did that, a couple of them are going to require research because I asked him about specific medication. I thought he was a medical doctor, as in a pediatric, but he is not. He is an orthopedic doctor. So I sent I'm really concerned about this drug that they have that helps you quit smoking. The side effects are suicide, liver and brain damage, peeling skin, and I'm thinking, how in the world does a drug like this even get on the market? And I posed a question to Fred Carter, who is running for president. Well, the response to that is another time. Ladies and gentlemen, I think I see Tesla out there. Tesla, is that you?
It certainly is, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
Okay. I'm doing good. Thanks for filling in. Now, Tesla, give this guy at least a couple of minutes before you chase him off.
Hold on, I'm not done answering yet. I'll do my best, but it does appear that he seems to have a more favorable position that I'm more comfortable with. So I may not be inclined towards chasing him off, You did ask me at the last minute, so I haven't been able to do a lot of research on this guy, but I'll do my best. I promise.
Okay. Doc Jones?
Yeah, I assume that the candidate, Michael Price, is a medical doctor as well. He is not. Is that correct?
Well, he is not a he is a he is a, arms and limbs what is that called?
Orthopedic
surgeon. He's an orthopedic surgeon. I was under the impression he was a pediatrician. I had heard him. He's a very well spoken person. He has very little love for the current administration. And he puts it in very unpolite terms at times, but
right.
I wrote him, and this was about a month ago. We finally were able to come to a certain date, and I'm really, really excited because, number one, is I think he's the first real candidate running for office that I have booked. You know,
really?
Well, the first guy had Tesla took care of in 60 seconds. He hung up on it. When they got in, the second guy called back, but... either way, and one great thing about Mike Price, he's from a military family. And when I got to talk to him on Van the Radio Man show, he wasn't afraid to challenge me on an issue when I challenged him on the Patriot Act. And he pointed out certain things, and I like that. I get tired of these politically correct candidates that will tell Dr. Jones one thing, Craig Shaw another, and then Tesla another to appease all three. That's not going to happen.
Well, great.
Anyway... let's see. I thought we had a caller in. Let's see. All right. Nope. Craig Shaw, I got your message. No, that's me, not Dr. Jones. Anyway, Dr. Jones.
Okay.
All right,
I got it straight now.
Okay. Dr. Jones, do you have an opening statement or anything while we just kill the time? Oh, hi, Antoinette, too, while we kill the time and wait for.
Well, I am.
How long will
really...
you be joining us for?
Me? Dr. Jones been doing this stuff long. Well, go ahead. Go ahead, Craig. Ask your question.
How long will Dr. Price be joining us?
We hope for an hour, right
okay.
around there. A
great.
Minimum of 10 o'clock, depending on what time he calls.
Okay.
I did not, as I said, I didn't actually get a number from him in advance. Normally I do that, but we've been exchanging the emails. Quite a bit. He did write me, and that's when he said, "What prescription were you talking about?" And then he told me he is an orthopedic surgeon. So that's when I sent him the question. And I'm definitely going to ask him what he thinks about Jim Tressel. For those who don't know, Jim Tressel is one of the best coaches in college football, who's under a huge scandal for paying off players. He recently resigned. That's kind of, even those who don't follow football, it's probably the equivalent of a very good coach, not quite a Vince Lombardi, but an extremely successful coach. Tesla, how about you? Opening statement or anything you care to add before while we kill time? I keep staring at this monitor thinking, come on, hurry.
not really. Like I said, you call me on short notice. I'll do my best to ask the first question. Ohio's a great state. I've been there a few times myself. And with the Republican governor you've got up there, hopefully that will help turn the tide in the presidential elections in 2012 and turn that electoral rich state to the Republican column come 2012.
Hear, hear. Indeed. I couldn't agree more. I'm looking forward to it. And you know what, Mike, you put such great shows together when you have these guests on, be they real candidates or imagined. The shows are always great. They're always entertaining. And I'm just really pleased that you chose my show to feature this candidate. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, Doc, thanks to you. And Tesla, before I think we might have we either got Doc or all these Ohio people on. We either have Mr. Price on or Doc. But before I do that, Tesla, somebody pointed out in the chat room that your show yesterday was very demeaning to Mrs. Obama, the First Lady, referring that she had a large booty. Oh, boy.
Really?
Tesla
well,
becoming
Mike,
like the rebel.
Mike, do you know why I call Mrs. Obama a lobster? Do you know why?
Why?
Okay. Well, I call her lobster for three reasons. Number one, like a communist, a lobster is red. Number two, she always has her claws out.
Ooh.
And number three, like any lobster, all the meat is in the rear.
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
Ouch.
All right, with that set, area code 303. Welcome. Area code 303. Hello?
Hello?
330?
Yep, this is 330.
Yes. Who do we have here?
We have Dr. Price.
Oh, Dr. Price, thank you. This is cool, Mike. Thank you so much, Dr. Price, for giving us this time. We were just kind of doing intros. And why don't you hold on, and I prepared a special intro for tonight's show.
Okay.
Dr. Price, you're going to enjoy this. If you even, when you make it to the big DC, you're going to be thinking of this intro, because this is the best intro ever.
Oh, I hope so.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, friends and fans alike, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, respectively. It's finally here, the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report, with our special guest, author, doctor, and Republican for U.S. Senate, Michael Price. Doc Weiss of the Conservative Underground and resident of Cleveland, Ohio area, come on down. Craig Shaw of BTR's We Are America, Wahoo Media, resident of Toledo, Ohio, come on down. Tesla of Socialism is Not an Option, come on down. And Dr. C. Robert Jones, retired Marine and host of tonight's program, come on down. You are the panel selected tonight for The Price is Right. And now, here's the star of tonight's show, Republican, physician, and author, candidate for U.S. Senate in the Buckeye State of Ohio, Michael Price.
Well, welcome, Mr. Price. How do you like that intro?
I think it's great. It's still going on. There we go.
Yeah, I killed it. Well, thank you. Mike, thank you so much. I don't know if you remember me, but I got to know you on Dan the Radio Man show, and I really enjoyed what you had to say, even in disagreement. I was commenting before you called. I like a candidate who will tell it like it is. You weren't there to appease anybody. And
that's correct.
You know, I have my state representative. He'll go to every house on the block and tell everybody different stories. Everybody thinks he goes to their church. But thank you again for coming. Why don't I give you a minute or two to give a little opening statement, tell people about yourself before we begin.
All right. First of all, I've not ever held a public office before, but I got into high-level politics because of what's happening at the federal level. I authored a book about health care, and several months ago when President Obama was speaking to Congress, he says, if you have any new ideas, send it to me. So I sent it to him, and I sent him a letter once a week for 11 weeks, and he never looked at the book. We said, did you look at my book? Did you read my book? And so forth. And then they pounded through this health care law with a non-parliamentary procedure that I just said, I'm in the fight now. I just can't stay out of it. The book has carried me to national prominence. I've been on Fox and Friends in the Fox Strategy Room and NBC News and several, probably 25 syndicated radio programs. And we just heard the other day that a major Tea Party, and I won't say which one yet because the deal hasn't been made, but they want to take over the production of my book, and they want to sell it to across the country to Tea Party people because the person that's in charge of doing this said that they think that this is probably the health care plan that can overturn Obamacare. And we've heard that before. One radio talk show host said once upon a time that he said he thinks this is the Bible for health care reform. So a little bit about myself. I'm a practicing orthopedic surgeon. I've been married for 32 years. I have two lovely daughters that are both living in New York City and both employed. One's in law school and the other was in fine dining. And I'm a small businessman. I'm a patent holder. I'm a I'm a Second Amendment guy. I belong to the NRA, and so I'm all the things that doctors really aren't supposed to be, especially in politics. Because I think now is the time that a doctor really needs to get engaged. Next election, the next big election we have in 2012, is going to be all about jobs and health care. And I believe I'm the best candidate in Ohio right now to help our government get through those issues.
Well, Dr. Price, I'm going to be biased right off the bat and say I happen to agree. I've since meeting you, I've studied all the candidates. I've also I like what you have to say. And as I said, you don't fit the mold. Criticizing other Republicans, criticizing other physicians, wow. And you have the betterment of the people in mind. And that's we just don't see that in too many candidates. Let me give you a quick view of who we have. We're hoping Doc will call. Doc's from the Cleveland area. But we have Craig Shaw. He hosts a show on BTR called We Are America. He's in the Toledo area. Tesler, who hosts a show on BTR called Socialism is Not an Option. Wait a minute. Let me reframe it. Tesler, who hosts the best shows on BTR, Socialism is Not an Option. And then C. Robert Jones, whose show you're calling into today, is a retired Marine of 30 years, a very, very good friend, and he also hosts the Conservative Report. He's a graduate of William and Mary as well, during the time when Lou Holtz was around. So, all right, Mr. Price, with that said and done, again, thank you for being here. We'll let Tesler throw the first question at you. Those who have questions, please post them in the chat room, and I'll throw them at Dr. Price if we have time. But he is on limited time, so go ahead, Tesler. Tesler? Yeah. Tesla, you there? Hang on a second. All right. Oh, sorry about that. No, that's me bad, Doc. I muted the mics.
Okay.
So that's
can
our
you,
first,
can
first
you hear me now?
Tesla, we can hear you. Doc, I gotta give you a fair warning. Tesla always chased my guests out early, so here we go. But all of
no, guys, no, no. I've done no such thing. Now,
okay, Tesla, go ahead.
Dr. Price, it's a pleasure meeting you. Thank you very much for being a guest on this show.
Thank you.
You know, and I've seen that you've got a great governor there in Kasich. Very, very good governor, although he should decide whether or not he's going to take that pay cut, don't you think?
He's going to take the what, sir?
The pay cut, all that the state employees are supposed to take.
Yeah, I understand.
Apparently that's in Ohio.
That's a big political move that a lot of people do from time to time, and I suppose if he said he's going to take it, he should do it.
Well, you're exactly right. Dr. Price, I noticed, I was called in at the last minute, but I noticed on your website, on your immigration policy, you indicated that both Cuban refugees and Haitian refugees have a policy that's applied to them by the United States called, both feet on dry land, the wet foot, dry foot policy. But
right.
It's my understanding, sir, that policy does not apply to Haitians. Now, I looked it up, and the policy statement is issued as early as last month. There's no policy that applies to Haitians that way, only to Cubans. And that policy being, of course, that are both planted on the soil in America, they're granted an asylum. I don't know where you got that issue. That Haitians are also beneficiaries of that policy because I posted the link to that policy from the government in the chat room, and I would respectfully request that you review that policy again. I don't think Haitians apply.
Okay. I was fortunate enough to be drawn into the FBI Citizens Academy, and during the time that we were studying about the FBI, that came up, and but we were led to believe that it was Haitians and Cubans, and if I'm wrong, then certainly then we even have a different setup for immigration. But the point is that they do not make the laws equal for everybody. They don't enforce them equally, and one person can walk across the border and another person can't.
Okay. And let me ask you this question, which is really the second part of my question.
Can I ask a question first? Does he have his radio turned up or something? Because there's an echo in there that's cutting off, that's clipping his signal there.
I'm not sure. I did text him. Hang on, Tesla. If you'll jump on that, let's go to Dr. Jones, and then we'll go right back to you a second, Tesla. But it was killing actually my ears. Let's see, Doc Jones. Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Doc. Alrighty, go ahead, Dr. Jones. Your question for U.S. Senator candidate Michael Price.
Dr. Price, you are a man of my own heart, a military man, a pilot. I am both, and I do appreciate your service, and I appreciate what you're doing here. What do you think your chances are of in this upcoming election of 2012, and what are some of the first things that you'll do once you are a member of the United States Senate? What are some of the first things that are on your agenda?
The first thing is that I ran in the last election as an independent because I didn't have time to get into the Republican primary, and I wanted a chance to get my views out in front of the public, so I filed as an independent, and I had to get five times as many signatures. And then I went out, and I've been campaigning since last year at this time. And so my chances of winning this election, I think, are growing every day. I've made a lot of friends in the Tea Party in Ohio, and we've started to make a lot of friends in the Republican Party because of my views are hitting home. And I think I have as good a chance as any, and I really think that as the election goes on, you're going to find out some things about some of the other candidates that aren't going to be too complimentary to them because some of the things they've done since they've been in office. And I think that one of the reasons why I think people are going to pay attention to us is when I started my campaign, I developed a philosophy. And we've heard so much from President Obama and the Democrats that they say that we need a fundamental change in America. And I don't think we need a fundamental change in America. I think we need a fundamental change in the people that we sent to Washington, D.C. And that's what we put on the back of our little business card, and it's on our website, and it's on all the campaign literature that we're sending out. Because that's really where we are. The professional politicians have proven time and time and time again that they're just not getting the job done. They go down to Washington and they get in that atmosphere, and they tend to get into the habit of serving themselves and not the people that put them there. So I'm all about representing the people of my state. Now, the first thing that I want to see happen is that, you know, as a physician, and I think I heard that there was another doctor on here tonight, as an operating surgeon, we have students come in the operating room occasionally, and when it's probably their first time that they've ever seen the real thing, and there's lots of blood, and so they get a little upset about it, so we kind of kid them with a little tongue-in-cheek saying that we say, well, you know, a surgeon's motto is that sooner or later all bleeding stops. Well, the biggest thing that, you know, there's a little bit of wisdom in that as well, because you can apply that to spending. And when you say, if we don't stop spending, pretty soon spending is going to stop itself. So the first thing that I want to do is I want to attack this out-of-control spending. If we don't control spending, this country is simply going to sink into oblivion. That's the first thing that I would do. I would go after that in a big way. I have an idea that one of the things that we can do is, and I find that there's only two areas of the Constitution that I think are a little bit weak, and this is one of them. But I think that in order to the Congress is not going to give this up easily. So my intention would be to introduce a constitutional amendment that says that no bill can be signed into law that has any kind of an amendment, an earmark, an adjustment, an alteration of any kind that doesn't have something to do with the original intent of the law. And once that's in place, if they don't stop spending, then the second part of that would kick in that says that if it's going to be federal money, it has to involve at least three states, except under extenuating circumstances like Katrina or those tornadoes or a volcano or an earthquake or something like that. But three states have to be involved in order for federal money to be doled out. Number one, that's going to stop the EKG of a fruit fly. It's going to stop the what was that thing they did with that little shrimp that was on a treadmill and so forth?
The treadmill. Yeah.
And what happens then is that 47 other states have to look at this federal money as it goes out through their representatives, and they can sit there and say, you know, I don't want my money to go to a Louisiana purchase where the governor said that she wasn't going to vote for the health bill because she had four things that she had great questions about, and 10 hours later and $300 million of everybody's tax money, suddenly she liked the health care bill. Now, that's how this stuff gets started, and that's the easiest way that I see to make it stop. You just take it away from the Congress and say, you're going to do things the way we want you to do them, and that's the first thing, is we're going to just curtail the crazy spending. And then once that gets under control, then they can start to apply their usefulness to other things in the government.
All righty. Well, thank you for answering that. Next up is Craig Shaw, who is a resident of the Toledo area, so he's right in your backyard there. Craig, are you with us?
Yes, it's a pleasure, Dr. Price, and I appreciate you giving us your time today. I have a sort of a two-part question. The first would be, do you think that there has been a – would you agree or disagree that there's a total disconnect between the federal government representatives, i.e. our senators and our U.S. Congress representatives, and the state legislators? And if so, what do you think that you and your counterpart, if elected, could do along with your U.S. representatives to sort of make sure that all of the individuals representing Ohio are working with the Ohio state legislature?
Well, there's a very good example of that, that we talk about how we have to stop spending and how jobs are one of the most important things that we're going to be doing in the next election. And I have said for a long time now that if the country does what I think they should do in the way of taxes and spending and so forth, and they get the economy turned around, that Ohio is going to play last fiddle, because they have two things in the way that are preventing jobs from getting started in Ohio. And number one, it's these incredible high health care benefits that people have to pay, the premiums they have to pay in Ohio. When these insurance companies, if you read my book, you'll understand where all this came from. There was an incredible collusion between insurance companies that the federal government just ignored. And that when they decided to come up with this health care plan, it's a business plan that all of them adopted. And if you notice, that none of them have a different business plan than any of the others, so it's all put together in back rooms and so forth, which is entirely against the law. It's antitrust and everything else. And they brought this plan to Ohio, particularly because there's an old saying that if you have a product, we want to sell it in Ohio, because if we can sell it in Ohio, we can sell it anywhere. And they brought it to this state, and they have devastated this state with some of the highest health care bills in the entire country, and with the least amount of service that goes along with it. Now, so that's one thing that has to be dealt with. Number two, we have one of the worst workers' compensation laws ever in the United States. And this was put together actually by one of the people that's running for Congress this year. It was one of the actual authors of that bill. And when that bill went into effect and became law, in the first 3 years, the state of Ohio lost $1.6 billion. And they set this thing up so that there is not only an employer who has four denials of a person's care, and then they have so they have to have an attorney. Then the state, whenever there's a conflict and somebody says that they're filing a claim and the employer's trying to stop it, they say that there's we're going to deny the claim. And so once there's a denial, then the state has to assign a referee. So they hire an attorney to referee the match, and then if the worker's smart, he'll get an attorney as well. So now we've got three attorneys involved in it. And then when this new law went into effect, they came up with these things called managed care organizations, and their purpose is to strangle the health care so that that they save money by not spending any money and denying health care. And the whole purpose of this is that if you can starve a guy long enough, there's about a 70% chance that you can starve a man out of his claim or a woman out of his claim from an injury. just by delaying the action on it. And so they set up 8 little court trials. So we now have 4 attorneys involved in it. And if you happen to either do business with the state of Ohio, or you happen to belong to or your employer is the state of Ohio, then the attorney general hires an attorney. And so now we've got 5 attorneys all sucking the money out of the workman's comp system, and it is incredibly expensive because these things drag on and on and on and on and on, and all these people get paid for all their little trials that they go through, and they get 1 or 2 trials away from going into a common pleas court, and then they back off and settle the case. So the workman's comp bills are so high that people in Ohio can't keep their job because people are leaving the state. Now, as far as a federal person who would get along with the state, that's one of the first things that I would look at and say, look, if Ohio is going to survive in this coming climate, we're going to have to get rid of those two things. We're going to have to redo the workers' compensation law, and we're going to have to do something about these runaway costs in Ohio as far as health care. Now, that's one way that the Congress can work together. The other thing that's going to happen is that they put together a pretty good freshman class this last time in 2010, and they're already starting to make some effect in Washington. And I think we should continue that trend and put people in there who are going to cooperate with them and do things that are good for the country. And by this class of freshmen, they have very good relations between the Senate and the Congress and the House representative. And, as you know, because of all the things that went on here in Ohio since Governor Kasich's been took office, there is a tremendous connect between what's going on in Washington and what's going on in Ohio. I think that the train's already rolling. We just want to get on board.
Oh, great. That was great answers, Doc. Quick, I'm going to ask you a quick question before I jump to a little piece. Basically, I took a little part of your video, and I want so this way the listeners can get to know you a little bit better. I also posted your link. If anyone is in the state of Ohio or around there interested in volunteering, check out his website. My quick question is regarding your family. Do you recycle? Are you a recycling family?
You mean like trash?
Yeah, like recycle.
Oh, yeah.
No, not trash, like paper and plastic.
Okay, I was not sure where you were headed there. Yeah, we do. We have the place where we live mandatorily has us separated. And so we have a little basket out on the right next to the sink, and when the time comes, I empty a can of Coke or Diet Coke or whatever. It goes right in the basket. And there's plastics and glass, and everything goes in there, and all the rest of the trash goes in the other. So we do recycle.
Okay. Well, throughout the interview, I'm going to throw kind of just a little get-to-know Mike Price. By the way, my friend just messaged me. I have a picture of you in our description box. I don't know if you got to see it. There's a picture of you and your wife.
Yeah,
he wants me to tell you your wife has it going on. It's in our description. I'll send you the link. But I sent it with you in my last email. He said your wife has it going on, so I think that means that she's very beautiful. Here's Dr. Price from his video, and which was incredibly informational. In the second half, we'll play some. But here's just a brief introduction about Dr. Price.
Hello, my name is Dr. Michael Price. I'm a practicing surgeon from Ohio. I am also the author of Anathema, America's War on Medicine. For those of you who have never encountered the word anathema, the dictionary defines it as a person or thing that is detested or loathed, such as that subject is anathema to him. It means something that is held in abomination. In modern-day vernacular, it simply refers to an outrage. I could not think of a more appropriate term for the book than Anathema, America's War on Medicine. I wrote this book to try to educate the American people about how the best healthcare system in the world has been nearly destroyed by various forces, including the American government, insurance companies, lawyers, doctors, and yes, even the American public themselves.
All righty. Well, that's just a brief intro. Well, let's jump back to Tesla. Tesla, hopefully that mic is fixed. Go ahead. You're next.
Yeah, let me know. How is it sounding right now? Because I did not fall on Skype. Is it sounding okay?
No, it's still echoing. It's still echoing, Cutler.
Because that's lovely stuff. I'm calling off the usual cell phone that I call.
Go ahead, throw the question out if you can, and let's see all let's right. see if we can respond. No, Tesla, you're not coming in at all. I don't even think he heard you on that.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I'm going to switch phones and see if that works. Okay.
All right. Tesla's going to switch phones. Sorry about that. Dr. Price, my question for you is, should the universal health care or this health care that you're about to introduce, and we'll talk about more of that in the second half of the show, should it include dental and orthodontal work? I know in a lot of these care plans, dentistry and orthopedic work on as far as braces, et cetera, are separate.
Well, frankly, the healthcare plan is it can be universal. It's not a mandatory program, but what it does is that it offers people an affordable healthcare plan that is put together and is run actually by the physicians themselves. Now, as far as whether or not dental or orthodontics should be involved in that, I think that that can be an option, and you can certainly purchase that if you want to. But I think that has to come down to when the thing is actually organized. That I think that'll have to be decided at that time. Myself, I don't have any particular worries one way or the other about it. The healthcare plan is so cheap that we certainly could afford it. There's no doubt about that. So to me, it would be something that could be on the table.
And I will. We will play you your interview with Fox and Friends coming up shortly. I thought that was great. You really broke it down. One of the things I said prior to the show, or prior to you calling in, I like how I think a lot of times these people who are running for office like to use words to where when they're done, you're staring, thinking, what in the hell did they just talk about? I think you broke it down in very easy terms, including, if I'm not mistaken, the moderator said to you, he goes, you made that way too simple. If I'm not mistaken, he said something along those lines.
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah, and Dr. Jones, next question for Dr. Michael Price.
Dr. Price, the outline in your book, I do not have a copy of the book. I ordered it on Amazon a couple of days ago. It's not here yet. However, I do have some excerpts and then from the book, and I'd like to ask a couple of questions about it. In your book, you lay out scenarios where we can healthcare can be made to be affordable for everyone, but it sounds so very simplistic, such to the extent that it just sounds too good to be true. Total healthcare in the past was and still can be affordable, but it can only be a reality if it's controlled by those who put healthcare first and profit last. Is that realistic?
Well,
do you think?
Let's put it this way, that if this country's going to survive, it's going to have to be realistic. This is not something that we can play around with anymore. Healthcare is dragging this country down very similarly to what happened to Great Britain. And the reason why it's being dragged down is because there are too many people who don't belong in the pot. And when you get what I call the economic saprophytes out of the formula, healthcare becomes very affordable. There's a couple other things that have to be done, is that we have to come up with a new way to handle liability. Liability is the big ticket item in everything, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, private health insurance, the government insurance. Liability is what's driving a lot of these really high costs. And if you'll recognize, not one of the people in Congress, not the president, not anybody that's come up with any kind of a healthcare direction in this country has done anything to solve that problem. And I have completely reformed how liability is handled in this healthcare plan. And the most important thing is that it does not interfere with anybody's constitutional right to sue. I'm a doctor, and I'm probably the only doctor in America that's going to sit here in public and tell you that I don't think tort reform belongs in healthcare. Tort reform is a imposition on people's constitutional right to sue, and I don't want to see that get started, because once you take a whack at it somewhere, then it starts happening. They start tearing the whole thing apart sooner or later. We have no constitution. And the reason why, I wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal, which they didn't publish, but it talked about tort reform being a poison pill or the miracle cure. And it really is not a miracle cure for healthcare problems. In Ohio, we have tort reform. And the man from Toledo, I'm quite sure, will tell you that we have tort reform in Ohio. But I use an example of a cardiologist, a friend of mine, who read my book and said, "Boy, you really have this liability thing nailed." And he said his own neighbor called him one night, and he said, "I just went out to the hospital because I couldn't get an appointment with my family doctor." He said it took him 3 months to get in to see him, and he had a headache for 3 days, and he thought something serious was wrong. So he went out to the emergency room, and he came home with an $18,000 bill just for a headache.
Dang.
And so he called the cardiology friend of mine, and he says, "What kind of a racket are you people running out there?" And then he said, "Well, let me get the emergency room fellow on the phone and find out what happened." Well, it turns out they literally did everything they possibly could. They drew all the blood they could. They ran every test they could. They did a CT scan of his head. They did an X-ray of his head. They did an MRI of his head and his chest. They did all the cardiac tests, and then they tapped his spine. And then when they said, well, when nothing came up, then they gave him some medicine to go home, and he had an $18,000 bill. So the cardiologist asked the emergency room doctor, "For crying out loud, what are you doing?" And he said, "Look, I've been sued 4 times over headaches, and that's not going to happen to me again." And this was in the face of tort reform. What killed this frivolous lawsuit in Ohio was when the liability insurance companies decided to fight every single case. Because these attorneys would just file a suit. Somebody would go in and say, "I don't like what happened to my arm or my leg or my heart or my, you know, whatever." And they'd file a suit. And they knew that there was no real harm that came to these people, but they were hoping that a lot of doctors just don't like to sit on a witness stand and take cross-examination. And myself, I love that kind of thing, so I'm always willing to sit there and banter with them. But the problem is the doctors would just – they would cave in and just settle. So the attorney would get a $10,000 check. He'd take 67 or 57% of it and give the rest to the person who suffered the injury, and they'd walk away the attorney would walk away with $5,000 or $7,000, and that would be the end of it. Well, now the insurance company said, "We're not putting up with that anymore," and they decided to fight every single claim. So that's really what happened in Ohio, that tort reform doesn't really solve the problem. And I've pretty much proven it with that one example, but I can tell you that it goes on and it goes on and it goes on. And if the day that they take away my ability to protect myself by ordering whatever I need to make sure that chart is complete and that patient is fully protected from my health care or from the health care that I'm providing for them, that's the day I quit. And the problem is that it is so expensive that we can't continue like this. So I rewrote how we handle it. And it's very cleverly done. It just cuts the cost in medicine by about 60%. And there's an old saying that doctors will say, if you think about it, do it. Because when you don't do it and you think about it, that's when you get burned in malpractice cases. And that's where all of this spending is coming from.
Indeed. Just one follow-up question. Your book outlines a three-step program that would reduce healthcare costs by more than 50%. I don't have the book in front of me, but if all three steps are not too lengthy, could you take me through them? Or if they are lengthy, but perhaps just one or two?
Well, the three-step program is number one, we have to have a common digital electronic medical record that is not controlled by the government. It's supposed to be an electronic record that's shared only by healthcare professionals. Number two is the reform in liability. And number three is to eliminate what I call entrepreneurial medicine. And this is all done under standards of care that are written by doctors. The standards of care are, this is the basis of the healthcare plan, is that 90% of the American population want their healthcare in the hands of their own physician. They don't want it in the hands of a politician or the hands of a government official like the Health and Human Services Secretary is going to be under Obamacare. They want their doctor to take care of them. And so my position is that the doctors write the standards of care. And then they set up an algorithm and a treatment plan for every diagnostic code. And in the initial period, they make it very broad so that everybody, every doctor who has his own little way of doing things can get it in there. But the trick to it is that every year, the doctors have to go back into a conference to look at these standards. And they look at what I refer to as adverse outcome. And if the adverse outcome, that's where all the payout comes. If the adverse outcome is too high in the type of thing that you're doing, then that gets eliminated. And pretty soon you start narrowing the standard to where we get down to things that absolutely work. And when they absolutely work, three things happen. One, we lower the cost. Two, we lower the liability. And three, we raise the quality. And there is absolutely no other healthcare plan that does that. And that's what everybody says has to be done, but this does it just because that's the way it works. Every year we review the standards of care. And we're not just reviewing, you know, like you see these papers in the medical journals where they'll make a statement about how something should be done based on 25 or 100 patients. And this is going to be dealing with 300 million people. Now I caught some flack from some people who said, well, you're just trying to make it mandatory like Obamacare. I said, no. The big thing is that this healthcare plan will be available. And when you really see how we can cut the cost by dealing with the liability and the electronic record and eliminating the entrepreneurial nature of medicine, we can cut the cost by 60-70%. And that brings it right down to about $100 a month, which when you extrapolate it, it's about $1,200 a year. And that's pretty close to what it was in 1970 when we were ranked number one in the world, had the best facilities, the best doctors, the best health care in every category, and it only cost $356 a year. Right now, it's costing us somewhere between $8,000 and $10,000 a year per person. We have the most expensive health care in the world, and we are ranked number 37. Now, that's a 2009 statistic. We're ranked 37th in the World Health Organization, and we are ranked 19th. Out of 19 industrial countries as far as the quality and access of medical care in this country. We're the richest country in the world. We have the finest trained doctors and the finest facilities, and we can't put them together because too many people have their mitts in the pie.
Well put, Doctor. Tesler, did we get your problem taken care of? That was very well schooled, by the way, Dr. Price. Tesler, you got that mic problem? You're good, Tesla. We can hear you.
Very good. Dr. Price, sorry for that interruption before on immigration policy. I noticed in your website that you don't seem to address, maybe I missed it, you don't seem to address the issue of abortion and right to life. Are you a right to lifer, sir? And if so, do you believe in any exceptions to abortion?
Well, I have a little story that I tell when people ask me that question, and believe it or not, that we don't address it on the website because it's such a fire stick. We like to deal with people on a personal basis when they talk to us about that. And that's, I get asked that question three times as many as all the other questions asked together. Now, I am a physician, and I can tell you that I've had some issues about abortion. It started when I was in medical school. When we were moving from the classroom to the clinical areas, where you put on a white coat and go out in the hospital and learn how to put to use what you learned the first 2 years, the different departments were going to send somebody in to discuss what your responsibilities are going to be on the individual services. Like in pediatrics or internal medicine or cardiology or what have you. Well, when it came time for the OBGYN doctor to come in, he came in with an attitude. And you have to understand that back in the 70s, these kids competed to get into medical school, that they were so afraid to do anything that might get them kicked out. And when I went to med school, I was a little older than everybody else because I'm a U.S. veteran and I served my country before I ever even went to college. I joined the Navy right out of high school. I was 17 years old. And so when I got there, I'd had a little bit of worldly experience. And this guy walks in, And instead of introducing himself and start talking about our duties on the OBGYN service, this guy stood up there and said, "Who in this room won't help me with an abortion?" So I already had my ideas about that as it was, and I just held my hand up, and my roommate, we were the only two that held that up, held our hands up. And he saw my roommate first, so he says, "Why won't you help me with an abortion?" And he says, "Because I'm a Catholic, and the Catholic doctrine says we don't support abortion, and the Holy Father says that," and so on. And this guy just laid him out. He goes, "I go to the same church that you do, and that's a bunch of hogwash." And for 10 minutes, he just read him the Riot Act. And then he said, "So?" And my roommate says, I don't care. I can't go against my faith. I'm not going to do it." And so then he turns and he says, "Where's that other guy?" And so I held my hand up, and he says, "Why won't you help me with an abortion?" And I looked the guy right in the eye, and I said, "I won't help you do anything." And the breath went out of the rest of my classmates because they thought I was on a railroad right out of med school right then and there. And then I proceeded to tell him that he didn't have any right to talk to anybody like that. And he was supposed to be down here talking to us about what services were going to be on and so forth and so on. And I said, "Frankly, you're not doing what you're supposed to do, and you're wasting my time." He said, you're supposed to be telling us what we're going to be doing on OBGYN, and all I hear about is abortion. Is that all we do is abortions around here? Because if that's what we're doing, I'm not going to be doing very much. And so he walked out. And I had trouble with him further down into med school. And the second thing that happened is when I graduated from med school. Because of all the Roe versus Wade talk and all of the furor over it at that time, they decided to take the passage out of the Hippocratic Oath that says I won't do an abortion. And when I found that out, I was really dismayed. And so when we took our Hippocratic Oath, I made the... it was a really kind of a magical place, and all the law students and the medical students and the senior students and all the families and everything were in this big chapel. And when it came time to, for that passage belongs in the Hippocratic Oath, there's a natural break. I said very, very loud so the whole room could hear me. I said, "I won't do an abortion." And once again, the breath went out of my classmates, but I was the only one in my class to make that statement. That's my take on abortion, and they're very strong feelings, but I can tell you, I've been around long enough to see what happened in the late 60s and early 70s when a desperate person who doesn't want to be pregnant will take such strides to try to eliminate that I know that there is, and I've made this statement publicly several times, that there's never, in my mind, a time where an abortion is appropriate, but there are times medically where it's necessary. And that's to be dealt with by the patient and the doctor.
So the bottom line is
my take on that subject.
So the bottom line is you are opposed to abortion, period.
Personally, yes.
No. And there may be medical times. What medical times are those that may run contrary to what many anti-abortionists feel? What times are those?
Well, obviously, if someone has been instrumented out in the street and they're bleeding to death, then it comes time that has to happen. Secondly, there's a medical term called a threatened abortion, where it turns into a miscarriage and the person can be bleeding badly, those types of things right there.
How about abortion in terms of incest or rape?
Well, like I say, you're now talking about criminal issues right there, and that's one thing that the court's going to have to deal with. As far as I'm concerned,
I'm asking you that a woman comes to you as a doctor and wants an abortion because she's been raped, or because she's been raped, or she's bearing a child because some member of her family forced her to, or she wanted to. Now, and there's no medical condition whatsoever that should prevent her from having that child. Are you in favor of abortion under those circumstances?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to do it. That's the first of all thing. And whether or not some other doctor chooses to do that, that's of his own ethics. I'm not in favor of myself.
Okay. So you're not in favor of rape or incest abortions?
Well, like I said, that's a criminal issue. And when the criminal issue, I mean, this is, you know, I'll go public about this right here.
A criminal issue.
I want you to understand one thing, that this is more than just a black and white The thing that I don't like is when people say, well, I'm a right to life and I'm a right to choose. It's more complicated than that. And that's all I can say, is that these are highly personal things. And the one thing that I have to say that as a U.S. representative in the Senate, that if we were to have a national referendum and the majority of the people in the country said that abortion is going to be allowed, then I can't use my personal views to override the majority.
So you're another Nancy Pelosi and Bill and Biden. What religion are you, sir?
I'm sorry? You said what?
What religion are you?
I'm a Methodist.
I see.
Is that bad?
I have no more questions for this person. I've learned all I had to learn.
Okay. Fred Stahl, thanks for waiting patiently. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to talk about the Patriot Act. And last month, three of the provisions which were set to expire were extended. I wanted to know that if you had been in office during this vote and if the vote would come up in the future, would you have voted for those three provisions to be extended, or would you have voted against them? If so or if not, why or why not?
Well, number one, that Patriot Act has been declared unconstitutional, and the Congress has kind of gone around that, and we're in very dangerous times right now. Now, I have to admit that my background is in naval intelligence, and so I've had the opportunity to see some things that go on that I was key to exposing and uncovering. Let's put it that way. Now, based on what I understand from the Patriot Act, that they still have to get a warrant from a judge and so forth and so on, and then the type of people that they are supposed to be investigating are not average citizens. Now, I was on a radio show the other day where a military officer explained to me that I think the man's name was Hayden. I think he was in charge of the one of those intelligence agencies, and they actually admitted to spying on telephone calls on soldiers that were calling home from the Middle East. Now, that to me is a violation of a constitutional right. And when people go that far and go outside the law like that, then they need to be punished. That I don't agree with at all. But the other thing is that I've had lots of people tell me that they think this is a violation of our liberties. And so I take the question and I ask them, what has the Patriot Act done to you personally? Have you been bothered by the Patriot Act? And not one person to date has said yes. And so the type of people that they're looking at, you know, if you're a private citizen and you obey the law and you do everything you're supposed to do, but you suddenly start gathering things like C4, or you start gathering diesel fuel and fertilizer, they're going to start watching what you're doing. I guarantee you, because that's what the Patriot Act is supposed to do, as I understand it. So would I vote for those things? I'd have to look at them in depth and see, because I'm not familiar at this point in time just exactly what was voted on last month. They put them back in, and they were things that that were in the law to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Can I follow up with a bit of a and obviously this is going to be you clearly respond to what I tell you. So one of the three provisions is Section 206 of the Patriot Act, and it provides for roving wiretap surveillance of targets who try to thwart Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act surveillance, FISA. Without such roving wiretap authority, investigators would be forced to seek a new court order each time they need to change the location, phone, or computer that needs to be monitored. The second provision was Section 215, which allows the FBI to apply to the FISA court to issue orders granting the government access to any tangible items in foreign intelligence, international terrorism, and clandestine intelligence cases. The third is Section 6001 of the Intelligence Reform and Terrorist Prevention Act of 2004, which closes a loophole that would allow individual terrorists not affiliated with specific organizations to slip through the cracks of FISA surveillance. And so, you know, I those were the three, summaries of the three provisions. And, does that allow you to further evaluate
well,
that?
Well, it sounds to me like that if you're a terrorist, then you'd be objecting to them violently. That sounds to me like what that means. I can tell you that I was invited into the FBI Citizens Academy, and the FBI Citizens Academy is an outreach to community leaders and so forth, and went to Cleveland for 8 weeks, and we took courses up there. And one of the classes that we took was about wiretaps. And I have to tell you that this isn't as easy as you think it is. The federal judges that hand out these warrants also put restrictions on what they can do with the wiretap. Like, there's a restriction that says that as soon as the clock hits something like 36 seconds, they have to turn the wiretap off for 2 minutes. Okay? And so what the FBI told us, they said, well, we get all set up and we got this guy, and all the bad guys know this law and know this premise. They all they get on is they start talking about the baseball game or their girlfriend or some other thing, and as soon as it hits 36 seconds, they know they got to turn the wiretap off, and that's when they do their business. And that's one of the reasons why they did the roving wiretap, to try to get around that those judges' rules, because the crooks know what's going on. And so, believe me, they're not doing this on private citizens. They're doing this on people that they suspect and have good evidence that they're about to create terrorist activities. And if you ask me, that's really pretty much what I was doing in the military. Nobody was blowing things up at that time, but we had to worry about whether the Russians were going to send a missile or whether they were going to, whether we had submarines inside New York Harbor or San Francisco Harbor, that sort of thing. So, it's a hot button issue, believe me, and
absolutely.
Basically on the surface it does interfere with personal liberties, and so you have to recognize that, and the people that are really being bothered by this are really people who have malintent for American citizens.
Alrighty. Follow up question.
Go ahead, Greg. Quick.
Yeah, a quick follow up question, and. And this is a hypothetical. Would you be in favor, Patriot Act aside, would you ever vote for legislation similar like the Patriot Act if you found that it circumvented our constitutional rights in order to fight against terrorism or Homeland Security? Is that a clear question? So I'm just kind of I'm creating this question as we're talking here, so I want to make sure that that's clear.
Well, I mean, that covers a lot of territory. And I think that's a pretty broad way to look at it. I'm not sure that the laws are written like that. I don't think that a law should have all-encompassing. I think there should be pretty some specifics built into it so that you can identify. Because not every situation is going to be the same. Certainly that particular thing might apply in one area and then it might do terrible damage in another. So I think that you'd have to look at it individually and decide and try to keep it within the Constitution as far as I'm concerned. That's really what I'm all about. I'd like to see everything be by the Constitution, but I also understand that the people that are doing this are not necessarily American citizens. And as far as I'm concerned, they're fair game.
All righty. Thanks for that. Doc, we're going to play another little piece. Here is something that I doubt a lot of people are aware of that Dr. Price points out, I believe, in his book as well as in his video regarding the Cadillac of Congress health care.
Either. I encourage every American to read about this health care plan and to stand up and force Congress to put on the brakes and listen to us, something they have not done for a long, long time.
With this web page that introduces this book to America, there is a link for Americans to sign up to participate in a grassroots movement to force Congress to take the same health care they are pushing on the rest of us. Now, in French antiquity, there's an old fable that tells the story of a princess, whereupon being told that the peasants have no bread, she said, "Well, then let them eat cake." Well, where would they get the cake if they didn't even have bread? This story parallels the hubris of our own government officials. They have purposely exempted themselves from our health care plan. Now, this smacks of the old Russian Politburo. The government sets themselves up with a Cadillac health care plan while the rest of us suffer with an envelope that has health care written on the outside and there's virtually nothing on the inside. Now, I propose that we set up a national referendum that the people of America vote on to force Congress to use the same health care they provide for us. The people of America have basically forgotten that America is a democracy first and a representative republic second. The Constitution leaves the people a safety valve to put the brakes on a runaway government, and I intend to initiate that very safety valve. Through referendum, we can force Congress to forfeit their Cadillac plan and take the same one they give us. Better yet, perhaps we should force them onto Medicare. This referendum can be written in a way that Congress cannot overturn it and the courts cannot review it. This will take a lot of work and dedication, but this is not an unknown enterprise to the American people. Now, I'm building an army in this war on medicine, and I intend to make sure that Americans get the very best health care that we can and stop this madness at the...
All righty. Well, I think people are aware of this. Doc, let me kind of follow up with it. This is true, is that if Obamacare basically does not cover members of federal government?
Yeah, it does not.
Wow, what a great plan.
They've exempted themselves from it, and if you look on my website, you'll see the 10 reasons why we don't want Obamacare, and that's the number one reason, that if this health care plan is so good, why did they exempt themselves from it, and why are they authorizing waivers for people to get out from underneath it?
The video you did on YouTube, I'm also going to post a link, was excellent. I think you pointed out an awful lot of things that people just don't know about, that we just never heard from our local political structure on. It includes this, it doesn't include that. And with that said, Dr. Jones, whose show is allowing us to host, you have the next question for Dr. Price.
Yeah, Dr. Price, you know what? When Mike asked you to come on, I was really excited to have you on for a lot of different reasons, but one of the reasons, there are a couple of questions I wanted to ask you, and the featured question, I guess, for me would be, you speak to the failures of Medicare and Medicaid in your book, and I'd like your opinion of the Ryan plan and whether or not it will do what he says it will do, and if that will be a benefit to our seniors at this, in the coming years.
Well, if you take a look at how I plan on dealing with Medicare, number one, I think that we can make it so that the entitlements are still there. Obviously, what the Republicans have done is really a pretty good plan. I think it's ill-timed. I said in the book, I talked a lot about how if someone makes a statement about Medicare, the other side politically is going to use it against them, and I think the popular term now is Medi-Scare. And so the Democrats jumped on that and said, yeah, they're going to take away your health care. And a lot of the elderly people in this nation aren't as politically adept as everybody that's on this show tonight. And so what my solution is that we set up this healthcare plan that I've developed, and then the government has to keep Medicare going until such time as we build up enough reserves to bring in the elderly, and then the government stops paying for all the healthcare themselves. All they have to do in the first decade is raise enough revenue to pay the premiums, because the healthcare plan itself will take care of the healthcare. and it will keep the healthcare costs down. It will destroy defensive medicine, and it will give everybody a reasonable shot at healthcare. Now, what that will do for elderly people is they just get a card like a kid that's 10 years old. They get a healthcare card. They go to the doctor, whatever they need. If it's within the standard of care, they get it. If it's not, they don't. And that's the way people want things to be. And it really kind of streamlines the whole process. Now, when you look at what the Republicans have done, they've realized that we're in it up to our neck as far as we can go. And they're saying that anybody that's 55 years of age or older, nothing's going to change for them, that they're going to keep their Medicare benefits just as they are right now. But in the future, they're talking about things like vouchers and I haven't been able to understand exactly how that really is going to work, because they're saying that the people have to pay for certain vouchers and I think what they're trying to say is that they're going to have younger people start putting away money right now to pay for their Medicare benefits as they get older. And plus they have to give up some of their Medicare or some of their money that they're being taxed to pay for the people that are already on it until the people that are 55 are all gone. Now, myself, I don't like two-tiered health care plans. I just very mm-hmm. much like to see everybody get the same treatment no matter who you are. And when you see how these things work, how the things pay for, there's a whole different plan on things about adverse outcome and sharing the liability and that sort of thing. And the money that comes in from these things grows at exponential rates. And by the end of a decade, anybody that goes into Medicare age won't have to pay anything at all for their health care once they're retired. No, they'll be done. Once they've worked their entire life and they've lived a good life and supported America like we all like to do, and when they hit a certain age, their health care is there. And that's what I think we owe people that have served America and lived their lives in a good fashion. So as far as I'm concerned, my way to do this is so sensible and so cheap that you just can't turn it down. If you've got a health care plan that costs you $100 a month instead of $500 or $1,200, or my wife and I are paying, we're paying $2,000 a month roughly. It's a great boon to the American people to have this thing put into place, because and believe me, a lot of people are catching on to this thing. It's really starting to grow, and the one thing that I would like to see is I'd like to see Obamacare overturned, because when you really get into it, it's a fundamental grab, the biggest grab of American rights and liberties as anything. It's almost like reestablishing a Russian government in the United States. When you see how
doctor,
it's come in. Go ahead.
Indeed. Doctor, what do you think the chances are of Obamacare being overturned? That's one. And two, you lay out a very well thought out, of course, simplistic solutions that make an awful lot of sense. Why do you think this current administration or to an extension, the Democrats want to do something, prefer what they're doing to something as simple and as straightforward and as common sense as what your proposals are?
Well, I can tell you that, number one, I don't think any of them have read the bill. I'll be honest with you. I mean the law. I don't think any of them even still to this day don't know what's in it. One of the things that we're going to campaign heavily on are people that voted for this law and then voted against the repeal, and one of them is Sherrod Brown here in Ohio. The issue there is that the only thing that I was able to find in the healthcare bill that had anything to do with a doctor-patient relationship were these end-of-life panels, right? And the end-of-life panels, the people that wrote this bill were very clever, because Sarah Palin started this furor a couple years ago when she said they're death panels. Well, mm-hmm. right off the bat, the news media thought they're going to have to jump on her with both feet, and that's just what they did. And they succeeded in making her look like she's a fool. But I can tell you, she was right on when she said that. Now, the disclaimer that they build into the law says that, and I paraphrase it, there's some pretty specific language, but it's paraphrasing, and it just says the government cannot persecute or prosecute a physician nor any kind of a healthcare institution that refuses to participate in end-of-life activities such as assisted suicide, euthanasia, or mercy killing. Now, when I look at that and I say, well, if they're going to refuse to prosecute me, that must mean that somebody, they're planning on somebody doing that. And why is that even in the healthcare bill? Why would they even talk about euthanasia? Why would they talk about mercy killing? This, to me, doesn't make any sense until I read down a couple of paragraphs in the bill. And then you see there's a statement there that says the following activities do not bear that protection. And it is the thing that doesn't bear protection is a doctor who refuses to withhold medications or medical treatments, a doctor who refuses to withhold fluids or nutrition, a doctor who refuses to over-medicate, a doctor who refuses to participate in an abortion, and a doctor who refuses to employ an agent that in and of its own right is something to relieve pain, but could result in the patient's death, so long as the doctor didn't give it for any reason to cause the death, which means that the doctor just has to write a note in the chart and said, I gave this person that medication to relieve their pain, and it ended up killing them, so they're off the hook by the government. They set up these little places where you can run and hide, and they're protected under the law. Now, that to me is, if you take a look at what euthanasia is, but what is euthanasia but the refusal of medications, the refusal of refusal to provide medical treatments, fluids, nutrition. Euthanasia is certainly over-medication. That's how it got started in Germany and in the Soviet Union. And so that's where I'm saying that this law is just evil. It's just absolutely evil. And then when you get down to how this thing, you know, when I read how complex this thing was not concocted in just a couple of weeks or a couple of months. This thing has been being put together for many decades because it is so complicated that the average citizen can't follow it. But it the second thing that happened then in this law that's going to be hard for Sherrod Brown and frankly Mr. Obama in the next election, if I have my way about it, is that they came up with a way to force doctors to do these types of activities. And the thing now is called the High Tech Act. And in the stimulus bill of 2009, which is the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, that's where they gave all kinds of money out to try to stimulate the economy.
Mm-hmm.
The day before the law was put into effect, an amendment went into effect, and the Health and Human Services Department eliminated the usual, 90-day or 120-day where you get notice and comment, where you can call in and say, look, I don't like this thing for this reason. And they did that on purpose because they didn't want anybody to know what they were doing. And they put it in a thing called the High Tech Act, which actually marries your medical records to the HIPAA law. And the HIPAA law was put into place to protect your records against such activities. But what this High Tech Act is, and on the surface it looks innocuous or harmless, and it says that every doctor has to be on an electronic medical record by 2014. And my initial response to that was, hallelujah, that's what I'm promoting in my book. But then there's
indeed
a statement that says the doctor has to be making meaningful use of the medical record. And I tried for 2 years to figure out what was meaningful use. There's just no real definition until they finally got all their ducks in order, and it turns out that their meaningful use means that in addition to all these surveys and audits that you have to run in your office that you don't have time or money to do, there is a computer function that on your electronic record that every keystroke that you type goes into the federal government, okay? And it goes into an organization called HIT, thus the High Tech Act, HITECH. HIT is Health Information Technologies, and what they're going to be doing is they're going to be monitoring your electronic records. So the federal government, through the HIPAA law, which is supposed to protect your medical records from being hijacked, they've hijacked our medical records as it is. And so in order to entice the doctors into going on to an electronic record, and I can tell you the last that I knew I attended a seminar maybe about 6 months ago, and at that time there was only 2% of the physicians in the state of Ohio are on an electronic record. Now, according to this law, they're setting themselves up for a big fall. The reason being is that the medical record has to be in effect by 2014. So right off the bat, they're going to try to entice people into getting these certified medical records that give them all your health information, which you're supposedly protected against by the HIPAA law. And if you don't do it, and you get to 2014, they've set up four categories of penalties for doctors. And the first one says that you just didn't know. Now, there's a lot of doctors that aren't like me, that aren't political junkies and don't listen to the news, and they just do their work and go home and read books and don't pay any attention to what's going on outside. Well, if you just don't know, they're going to fine you per chart at $100 up to $50,000 per chart. The fines start at $100 per chart, up to a maximum of $1.5 million every calendar year, all right? And then the second category is that you just couldn't make it happen. Now, these electronic records cost anywhere between $50,000 and $100,000.
Most
medical practices that are, and this is part of their ideal, is to destroy the solo practitioner. We still have 32% of the doctors that are solo practitioners in this country, and that's the biggest group of doctors that we have. The others are small splinter groups, like a group of three doctors, a group of five doctors, that sort of thing. But the solo practitioner still makes up 32%, and that's the government's intent, is to destroy those people. And when you read my book, you'll understand that was why we had such good health care back in 1970. So if you just can't make it happen, you can't afford it, for crying out loud. Your fines start at $500 a chart. No, excuse me, they start at $1,000 a chart up to $50,000 for a maximum of $1.5 million per calendar year. Now, the last two are called willful disregard. And willful disregard, when you get caught and you decide, you relent and you say, okay, I'm going to put the medical record in. Your fines start at $10,000 a chart, up to $50,000 a chart, once again for $1.5 million per year, per calendar year. And then if you just tell the government you're not doing it, then your fines are $50,000 a chart for a total of $1.5 million for each calendar year. Now, the kick to that is, that in 2014, if you're not on an electronic record by that time, then they can go back and audit you all the way back to the beginning of the High Tech Act back in 2009, which means that every doctor that doesn't have an electronic record in place that makes meaningful use of the medical record could be subject to as much as $7.5 million in fines. Now, that opens the door for the government to say, guess what, doctor? You owe us a lot of money. And now you're going to work for us. And when they make you work for them, they can force you by financial penalty or criminal penalties, confining you, to create acts of euthanasia and assisted suicide and mercy killing. And that's the dangerous part of this law. And nobody knows about it. Specifically, the doctors don't know about it, and they hid it from them very well. They're trying to entice them by paying them as much as $44,000 a year to use the electronic record. And I think when the American people find out that the federal government now has legal control of all their medical records, I think you're going to see a firestorm of let's get this bill overthrown, this law overthrown. That's what my job is, to run for the U.S. Senate. I'm going to be screaming about this for the next 8 months before, or 9 months before, or 8.5 months before we hit the primary. And if I'm lucky enough to win the primary, then I'm planning on really punishing Sherrod Brown, because he voted for this bill and he voted against the repeal.
Wow. So and very information. I mean, that's wow.
Yes,
that's
what everybody says when they hear this. They go, wow. And the thing that irritates a lot of people the most is that their privacy rights are being hijacked by the government. And they put it in the law now, so that if you try to keep them from doing that, if you tell your doctor that you can't send my medical records to the federal government, your doctor's going to be arrested, and you might well be too. And the thing is that the scary thing is that this is how all this stuff gets started in socialist governments. They conscript the doctors and they force them by way of financial or physical penalty to do their bidding on these types of things. And believe me, there are doctors that will cooperate with this.
Wow.
And that's the scary thing. That's why this law has to be overturned. There's no two ways about it. If we want to maintain our liberties in the United States, we have to overturn this law. This thing there's sections in this law that talk about community transformation grants. They can come into you. The Health and Human Services person is set up almost like a dictator, and they're developing 159 new organizations that are given regulatory and punitive power, of which we have no answer to at the ballot box or in the courtroom. These people are all powerful. They can just come in and they can say, we don't like the way you're raising your children. They actually have a section in there where they can come into your house and collect data about how you're raising your children. And if they don't like it, they can change how you're going to raise your children by sending them to certain indoctrination classes and things like that, like they used to do in the old Soviet Union. And the anathema here, and that's why my book is written like that, is that, you know, I went out and served my nation for 3 years on active duty in the United States Navy. And the things that I were fighting for was to try to prevent or to defeat a Soviet-style, socialist, tyrannical-type government. And throughout my entire adulthood, I've been watching all of these forces gathering to overthrow the American way of life and institute the same type of government that we gave up thousands and maybe millions of lives, trillions of dollars of treasure and resources to defeat those people. And they went, you know, we beat the Soviets. They went broke because of their economic policies, which are now very much like ours, and they went broke fighting a war in Afghanistan. So do you understand why all this is starting to tie in? This is so important, and that's the reason why I'm running for the U.S. Senate. And I know that there are going to be some issues that people don't like that I have to say, but this is absolutely the most important thing that has to be done in this election. This has to be overturned for that reason.
Well, thank you. That was very, very informative. We're going to go to another question, Doc. Oh, wait a minute. Let me ask you a couple real quick yes or no type answers, Doc.
Okay.
Drilling in Anwar, yes or no?
Oh, yeah. I'm all about it.
Okay. Also, what is your take on what's taking place with Jim Tressel stepping down at Ohio State?
Well, I have to tell you that just broke my heart. You know, that was a guy who came out of obscurity over at Youngstown State. I mean, he won four national championships over there on a Division II school. And not a lot of people knew about it, but we did in Ohio. And everybody knew that we thought he was the best guy. Now, there's two sides of the coin. A lot of people are arguing about that he was just standing up for his players, and I think that's honorable. But it gets down to the fact that when they asked him questions about it, he could have stood up for his players and said, yeah, I agree, you know, that what they're doing is wrong. But he lied about it. And you know, it's not so much the act of what he did, it's the lie that got him. And what I'm afraid of now is that this NCAA, which has set themselves up as a dictatorial power, they're going to come in and they're going to take away scholarships and they're going to try to cripple people, you know, kids that are looking to go play for Ohio State. They're going to get crippled because of this, you know, because of this particular incident. And they had no, they're innocent of anything, any wrongdoing that goes on there. You know, why don't they find the players? Why don't they find Tressel? But why don't they leave the university alone? Because the university doesn't show any evidence that they were in collusion with this. So I'm really disappointed. My father used to tell me that he played for a year at Ohio State, and he was pretty fast, and then he got a knee hurt, and then he didn't get to play anymore, but... So I've been a big Buckeye fan my whole life, and I have to tell you that this one really hurts. This one really dug deep.
Yeah. As a person who absolutely hates the University of Michigan with a passion, it hurt me too, let me tell you. Greg Shull.
I understand that.
Oh, go ahead, Doc.
But, you know, that's an honorable rivalry. And I, so I think there's nice things about the state of Michigan. There's a little place up in northern Michigan called Toponabee, and the northern part of Michigan is probably the best-kept secret in the United States. That's one of the most wonderful places to vacation I've ever been in my life. But when you start talking football, there's nothing blue and gold that I like, I'll tell you.
Yeah, me neither. You mean Mason Blue. I'm a blue and gold guy of Notre Dame. Skype caller. Well, Craig Shaw, go ahead. I'll see if we can get the Skype caller working. Craig?
Yeah, I had a question. You started earlier talking about the resemblance to some of the things in the Soviet Union. In the United States, you talk about the war on drugs and the ridiculous prison population that we've amassed. To put things into perspective, per 100,000 residents of Russia, there are 650 individuals incarcerated. In the United States, we have over 700 per 100,000 incarcerated, and from there it drastically drops down to under 100 per 100,000 when you look at other countries. And so obviously we have a huge amount of our population incarcerated. It's becoming an issue, not only budgetary, but also the resources when you're looking at nonviolent drug offenses. Do you think that we need some sort of to relook how we are adjudicating drug offenses in the United States?
Well, I can tell you that one of the real reasons why we have that problem in this country is that, back in the 1950s, drugs weren't really a great big problem. There's always been a little bit. There's always been somebody smoking some weed and some hash, and there were some heroin addicts and so forth. But it wasn't really a big problem until America's industrial might began to get eroded. And I really think that if we turn this economy around in the correct way and make it so that everybody has the opportunity for a good-paying job, you're going to see this part of America there will always probably be some drug problem in the United States, but if we can strengthen the dollar and if we can strengthen our industrial might so that everybody has a place to go work, I think that a lot of this stuff will go away. And certainly a lot of this stuff is coming from the inner cities, and because those folks down there, they're the first ones to lose their job and the last one to get it back. And they've got to survive somehow, and I think a lot of this stuff is just basic survival. I maybe don't really understand the whole thing that much, but the big thing that I'm saying is that you're right. We're starting to incarcerate people for an offense that in other countries they don't even bother with. Am I all in favor of legalizing drugs? No, I'm not. I just don't think that's the way to go. But I think the way that you solve this problem is make other things available to people, and I think that will become less and less a part of their life.
Okay. Great. Dr. Jones, do you have a last question for Mr. Price?
I do. First, I'd like to say that, I'm reading reviews on Amazon.com for your book here, and Andrea Garrison summed it up just right online with Andrea, that you do indeed do an excellent job of simplifying this issue by outlining the challenges and offering a viable solution for the healthcare crisis in the United States and beyond. She is exactly right. What you've done here tonight with us on our show, and so we certainly do appreciate it, is to do just that. And I cannot wait until the book is finally here so I can just get right on into it. My last question for you, Doctor, is what do you think the chances are of Republicans retaking the White House in 2012? And do you have a candidate that interests you? Your favorite candidate to this point?
Well, I would be remiss if I think that the cards are all laid out. If the Republicans play the cards right, they're gonna take back the White House. Number one, Obama has certain states that have turned to the red, And if he loses any one of those states, it's in the cards right now that he's going to lose the presidency. And he's down in North Carolina today trying to get their 12 votes by and he was in a shop that he's promoting. He gave him $12 million of stimulus money, and 5,000 of the jobs are in China. And they're growing. They're expanding in China and not in the United States. The things that are going to get Obama are they're not going to turn this thing around. You know, his style of politics are very much like the old New Deal. You take money and you just reinvest what the money that we have right here in, you know, and it's kind of like me giving $20 to my wife. That's great. She gets $20, and if she gives it back to me, I get $20. But it doesn't bring anything new into the family. And so the problem with Obama is that he thinks he can just go out and spend money and stimulate the economy, and all of a sudden the jobs are going to occur. Well, you know, back in the 1950s and the 40s and so forth, when we were a mighty industrial nation, that worked because we had mills that still made tires, and we had places that built cars and Jeeps, and we had places that do textiles, and we made steel. We don't do that anymore. There aren't any places for these people to go work, so where are they going to turn these magical jobs over? That, I think, is going to get him. The second thing is that he campaigned in 2008 on the very fact that he wanted to see gasoline prices over $3 a gallon. I thought that was absolutely crazy, but that's what his campaign pledge was. He's going to make sure that gasoline goes over $3 a gallon. What can that possibly serve except to put some people out of the loop? I think the gasoline prices are going to get him. I think the fact that people are still out of work and all of this stimulus thing that he talked about just isn't going to make it. He can howl to the moon about how it's going to take a long time to turn this thing around, but until we start creating an atmosphere where we can have jobs in this country, we're not going to have any. We've got to, and it's a national security thing, if you ask me. If we were faced with the type of response that we had to make in World War II, I don't think we could do it right now. And I think we'd be put in jeopardy because by the time we finally get ramped up to defend ourselves, we could very well be in some big trouble. And other people are starting to look at that around the world. And so I think that the Republicans have every chance to get in there and get it. Now, you ask me about who my favorite candidate is. Number one, I really like Ron Paul. And the other person I like isn't even running. My wife and I were discussing this morning. There's a little gal that shows up on Fox News all the time, and she used to be the press secretary for George Bush, that Dana Perino. I happen to think she's really one of the brightest people I've ever seen. She's right on the money with her statistics and her ideas and so forth. I think she'd make a wonderful president, but I don't think we'd ever see her. But I like really what Ron Paul is doing. And I made a statement the other day in a political Republican breakfast that I really like the guy, and I'm just afraid that he's kind of like Sarah Palin, where everybody's ganging up against him because they're so afraid of what he wants to do, because it's entirely 180 degrees diametrically opposed to what Obama's doing. And so they're doing whatever they can to pull the rug out from underneath him, and I just hope he's strong enough to make it work, because I like him a lot. I really do. Now, some of the other folks, I'm really not a Romney fan yet. He didn't impress me the last election, and I haven't seen anything yet that he's going to turn that around. But everybody else is dropping out, so you know it looks like he's going to be the front runner for a while anyway. But those are my choices right there. I like Ron Paul's politics a lot. I really do.
I can't disagree with you there. It's almost a scary thought that when Ron Paul talks about eliminating federal government bureaucracies or reducing taxes and giving rights back to the people, it's almost a scary thought that our own conservative so-called Republican movement is against him. I mean, it really makes me extremely, extremely nervous. Let's see if we get this Skype caller. Skype caller 111. Well, I guess that just won't call. Quick and final, thank you. I know you stayed after. Let me throw a couple of quick questions at you before we go. I want to thank you on behalf of our whole panel, Dr. Price. I know you stayed over well over. And
I wanted to kind of clarify the situation. The man that said that I'm just like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, I think he's dead wrong. I think he misunderstood my motive. Maybe I just can't express myself in the way that he wants to hear. And it's about that abortion issue. But I'm not a big abortion fan. But I do know that it's a very, very complex issue, and it can't be as black and white as people really want it. And you have to have walked a mile in my shoes to understand this. And I understand the furor behind it, believe me. But I didn't want him to misinterpret me, and I hope that I didn't offend him. But he mentioned something about me being like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, and boy, I tell you that can't be any further from the truth.
Well, based on what you said, Tesla's got tough skin. Tesla's a tough one. He's a great person to have on the panel because he's not afraid to address tough questions. All right. In closing, let me throw these questions to you. Browns or Bengals?
Browns or Bengals?
Yeah. Do you like the Browns or do you like the Bengals?
Oh, well, my golly, I've been a Browns fan ever since I could walk.
I guess that says it all. A little bit about yourself. You're married. You have how many kids?
I have two daughters.
You have two daughters?
We've been married for 33 years. 32 years,
wow.
Actually. And we're working on 33 right now.
Looking at her picture, she looks about 33 years of age. Doc, good going.
Yeah. I think she's the better half.
Closing statement, Doc, and thanks again. You know, I'd love anytime you have my number. Anytime you want to come on, I also host a show at night. This is Dr.
Okay.
Jones' show. George, your campaign manager, please tell him I said thank you.
Okay.
He communicated back and forth. I told him my show comes on at 11:30 p.m. He said you and him aren't up that late. So Dr. Jones was kind enough to give us his hours. Why don't you go ahead and give a closing statement? And on behalf of all of us, thank you for your time.
Well, you're quite welcome, and I hope that we've made a dent in some people's ideas. I'm running for office basically because I'm more afraid for my country now than I've ever been, and I think this is the time when people have to step up to the plate that are not afraid to face tough issues and tough questions. But we've got the job to do, and I hope that I'm a good enough candidate that people can feel that they can get behind me. The second thing is that these elections are not won on wishes. And what one of the things that we're trying to do is we're trying to set up a grassroots movement where just the average citizen can participate in his government by saying, yeah, I like Mike Price, and I'm going to send him $1 a month for the next, I guess now it's 8 months until the primary and another 8 months. So for the next 15, 16 months that they'd be sending me $1 a month. If enough people would do that, I would have enough money to win this election. We're going to need a strong grassroots support, and believe me, the cost of the dollar now is about 29 cents compared to what it was in 2001, so they're not going to miss it, and we can certainly use it because we need to get our message out, and I've been taught in the two campaign schools that I went to that you never should be embarrassed about asking people for money because the seat doesn't belong to me. I can't buy it. It has to be voted on by the citizens of Ohio, and those are the people that need to support who they want to put in the seat. And I hope that I'm the man that they can trust. Certainly the system is going to be about jobs and health care, and I think that I'm the most qualified person out there to handle those two issues. I'm far from a one-issue candidate, but those are the two issues that are going to determine where America goes in the next few years. And it's important that we put people in there that have a mindset, that have some good ideas about turning this thing around. I thank you very much for having me on. It's a rare occurrence where somebody can just let me run my mouth. And one thing, I'm not short of breath. And,
well, Doc, it's outstanding. Thank you so much for even your time. I know I speak on behalf of Dr. Jones as well as Tesla and Craig Shaw. Thank you very much. And we all have shows, Doc, so anytime you feel in the need to maybe, you know, get a point out there or whatever,
okay.
You know, our shows do reach a lot of people. My show at night has, I think we're rated somewhere in the top 10 on Blog Talk Radio.
Great.
And, you know, just good luck with everything. Thank you very much again.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you bet. Bye-bye. That is Michael Price, U.S. Senator candidate. And if I still got you on the line, I hope you liked my intro. I worked pretty hard on that.
Oh, I loved it. It was really great. It was good.
Good. Thanks again, Mr. Price. Okay, let's bring in Craig again. And Dr. Jones. Craig, you want to care to comment regarding the basis? You know, basically the last hour, he stayed 10 to 11, basically stayed almost the whole show.
Yeah, he gave.
Yeah, let me just go ahead and throw this. You know, I'm gonna do all I can for Dr. Price from where I am. And you know, the thing is, I looked up his district, and I have quite a few family members in that area too. So he's gonna garner a hefty vote count from my family because they're they're right there in his district, which I found to be amazing. Fortuitous, to say the least. So I'm going to go ahead and talk to them. Although I suspect there, there's a couple of Democrats in the mix, but we'll deal with them as well. But I'm going to go ahead and make some calls here since they're in his area, and I think it's really great because he's going to get quite a few votes. From folks from my family out there, they're in the Columbus and the Cincinnati area, but it should work out well.
Yeah, well, great. He's still with us. He's still on. So, Craig, how about you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed his answers that abortion answer. That was the best answer to the medical exception that I've ever heard. And it was clear, concise, and simple. he merely gave a good example. And because I, being pro-life, the exceptions are a big struggle. And he clearly explained it. That's the best answer I had heard to that. And I would be happy to have him represent Ohio in the U.S. Senate. And I also wanted to also point out that, when he first came on, the thing that I liked that, we need that change. But, he prefaced that he hadn't served in public office. And one of the big things I firmly believe for a long time, that how we need to change who we send to the Senate and the U.S. Congress is we've got to get out of our minds that a prerequisite has to be serving in, a lower state legislature or somehow that you have to come from politics in order to be able to govern. Excuse me, that's furthest from the truth. And he's a great example of someone that, I could care less. And I'm actually happy that he doesn't come from a political background.
I think we've seen way too much of that.
I apologize for coughing. I came on quick. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say Andrew Napolitano, who is clearly a conservative, made a comment. He thinks people should vote for those who have not held office before. Basically, he said an independent party. Right. And he is a strong, longtime Republican who is just fed up with what's going on. Right. And I'm sure for you, Doc Jones, it's really confusing at times to see people you have supported through the years really, I don't know, the only difference between seems like some Democrats and some Republicans nowadays is the D and the R next to their name.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's hard. What we need is a clear ideology, a very clear stance. You're right, Mike. There's just far too much ambiguity involved, and it's hard to tell where a candidate stands these days, or a member of your own party. But I think with the emergence of the Tea Party, that we're beginning to see a lot more clarity, a lot more resolute stances with regard to the issues that we as conservatives hold dear. I'm heartened by and encouraged by what's going on here as a result of this fiasco we call the Obama administration. Republicans, the conservatives, the true American patriots are stepping up in a big way to say, no, we're not going down this this path to socialism, Marxism, communism, whatever you want to call it. It's about America. It's about freedom. What the Obama administration did not count on, what this administration and the people behind this administration did not count on, was that Americans are hardwired for one thing and one thing alone, and that's called freedom. And we will not be trounced on, and we will not be led like sheep.
Yeah, correct.
Well said. How am I supposed to follow that?
I couldn't, so that's why I said Craig.
I completely agree, and you know, I also want to point out that you know there, you know how I, you know, when he made that initial statement, I don't mean to get stuck on sort of the same comment, but I always find it ironic, and if it wasn't so serious, I'd find it comical that. You know, every, you know, it's like every, you know, major election, you know, you go into a presidential year and everybody, we need change, 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 change. And yet we think we're going to, we end up putting majority of the individuals, you know, aside from 2000, we put these lifelong career politicians back in office at the same time we want some change. And also we do nothing but complain about the corruption in our government, and yet we continue to recycle individuals from this system that we acknowledge and understand is corrupt. And then we're surprised when we really don't make a dent in a lot of the problems. And, you know, I think a candidate like Michael Price, from everything I heard tonight and what I've read prior to him coming on, you know, he's an individual that epitomizes a strong conservative Republican candidate. So I don't know what more you could say.
Yeah, I
except for support him.
Sure.
Support him if you like what you see.
Well, you can always, you know, as he said, about sending him the 29 cents, which is our dollar, which is actually a sad situation. coming up right. Tonight, just a quick couple of program notes. Dr. Jones, are you joining me tonight?
Yes, I will do my best to stay awake. Yeah. It doesn't look like I have that much long to be up. So yeah, I think I can make it. I think I'll
yeah.
Be
well,
up. Yeah.
I see Tesla back. Tesla better join me and Craig too. Tonight we're going to talk about FEMA camps, and we still have Mr. Price. So if you want to join us at 11:30 for the GGT 183 report, feel free. Going to talk about FEMA camps. And basically, the federal government clearly taking over. You know, I really like the fact that Mr. Price continued to bring up the fact that he believes in the Constitution and health care was a violation of the rights. I don't know if anyone's aware of this, but our last president before Obama threw a temper tantrum, referred to the Constitution as a piece of paper. And bottom line is that people who value that Constitution are the people I want to vote for. And, you know, here's the thing. Even if we disagree with certain things in the Constitution, we need to stand up for them because the rights of the one aren't just as important as the rights of the many. Right. 1 minute to go. So with that said, Dr. Jones, again, thank you so very much for allowing me to steal your time here. We will see everybody in a half
pleasure.
Hour.
Yeah.
Craig, are you joining us tonight too?
Yeah, I'll be there for a little while. Got an early meeting,
okay.
So I'll be able to be there the whole time.
On behalf of all of us here at the Price is Right Studios, thank you to Mike Price. On behalf of Craig Shaw, Dr. Jones, and Tessler, we'll see you in 1.5 hour, everybody. Good night from the Dr. Jones Studios.
Good night, folks.
Thanks.
Not
good night, because we have 30 minutes until the next show, GGT
and
Cool Mike. All right. Talk to you later. I'll see you soon.
Well, listen to you guys going on and on. Good night. Good night, Mr. Price. Thank you very much.